Most people think of the jungle as one big, scary homeless camp under I-5. But it's more complicated than that. It's really more like a collection of neighborhoods. There's danger, for sure. Yet some people stay there for years. It's hard for people outside to understand why. KUOW's growth and development reporter Joshua McNichols takes us there.
At the south part of the jungle, the freeway is high overhead. The tents are far below, hidden in the ivy. In the day, there's a spectacular view over Georgetown, but now it's night.
All right, Saturday, 10:35 p.m. Robert and Carmen are just getting off the bus. I'm coming. We get off the bus, going to the jungle. We usually try to be home before it's dark, because it's not the best walk.
Robert and Carmen Patterson have been keeping an audio diary for us. They sent us this entry after a long day doing laundry at their daughter's apartment in Lake Forest Park. They didn't mean to come back so late.
We should come prepared. I got what I call a mini machete. Carmen's got some items. But as long as we have our lights. And we know most people around here, so it's not too big of a problem. But you never know about the crazies.
Like this one guy who tried to kill them both as they slept. That guy's in jail now. Most of the people here don't exactly have spotless criminal records. Many are addicted to heroin. Near the Patterson's tent, people live in piles of garbage and used syringes. But the Patterson's campsite is relatively clean. They're on the methadone program at a nearby clinic. There are other couples like that nearby. As we head north, we pass people sleeping in blankets on the ground. Those are the new arrivals. We also pass people who've been here longer, who've built plywood walls around their tents. This is the middle jungle, near the Rainier Brewery. Here, the freeway is about 10 feet overhead, so it's darker.
My name is Majok Lewis, and I'm from South Sudan.
Lewis's parents sent him to the U.S. from South Sudan when he was 13. Lewis hasn't seen his parents since then.
I didn't have nobody to help me. And I was just walking down the street downtown, and I find one South Sudanese person guy, and he just told me, "Oh, you can come and live with me in the jungle since you don't have nowhere to go."
Lewis says he lost his identification, so he can't drive, he can't get a job or a place to live.
So I'm stuck down here.
Lewis has watched his friends in the jungle turn bitter. They include former child soldiers from South Sudan, as well as other immigrants.
I can tell you one thing. They just hate the whole Seattle. They hate the whole Seattle. Because the situation that they are in it, that nobody's helping them, even though you talk, it won't help that much.
What's your hope for the future?
My hope for the future is very big. I want to be able to support myself. And I love my mom so much, and I love my family so much. I want them to see me again.
A muddy trail under the freeway carries us to the north jungle. Rain forms little rivers, forcing us to jump across. We stop at a spot called the Caves, where 5 people were shot in January. Here, the freeway is so close. Cars bang against the expansion joints overhead. 2 people died in the shooting. It happened just feet from Danny's tent.
We have to be very careful about who we see coming up that trail, because sometimes it's not good news. You know, sometimes it's the police. Sometimes it's somebody coming to do something bad.
Danny doesn't give his last name because his family doesn't know he's homeless.
We have sentries up here. We have people standing out here that are looking. And they call, one up from the bottom, one from the west. And unfortunately, that didn't work for us that night because the people came up looking like ordinary citizens, and then they just pulled out a gun and started shooting. Nothing we could do.
Kara Bernstein lives in the tent next to Danny. She knows there's danger here. And yet, at the same time, she says she feels safe. This is the paradox of the jungle.
I think for most of us, by the time we've gotten here to the point where we're living under a bridge in tents, we feel we feel very much alone and kind of a displacement and a separation from society. And when you're on the streets, there's absolutely no normalcy at all. There's no routine. And so when I found this place, it had been so long since I felt safe and welcomed.
Bernstein and Danny say the danger in the jungle comes from outsiders. And there's some evidence to support that. Craig Thompson lives in a house about a block from the jungle on Beacon Hill. He says he's seen dealers drive up to the edge of the jungle to sell drugs. Thompson and an army of volunteers have spent countless hours driving them out by gardening. The drug dealers don't like it when there's people around.
It can only be so tough when there's 30 young people who are eager to pull weeds around you.
Thompson and his neighbors have found weapons here in the forest next to I-5. Guns and knives, homemade spears and crossbows. The weapons and the people Thompson has met reveal something about the jungle. Thompson tells the story of a man who set out a hammock here and then claimed to own this piece of the jungle under the Homestead Act. That's the law that once allowed pioneers to claim land here.
Then he looked at me and said, "Here, let me show you what I've got in my pack." He opens up his backpack and pulls out what must have been a ream of legal papers, okay? And he starts flipping through them and he says, "You know what really bothers me now is that I file these papers and the judges won't even let me set foot in court anymore."
Just like back in pioneer days, the man's claim is rooted in the false sense that this land is abandoned. The land is owned by the state. It runs through the city, and it's also claimed as home by hundreds of people. In the jungle, I'm Joshua McNichols, KUOW News.